I'm Jack.
I'm Patty.
I'm Casey.
And we are
Cunts in Space!
Queer Feminist Podcast. Episode 1, Masked Feminist Avengers. This episode features Sylvia from La Barbe, Australia, Patrick Colwitz and Frida Kahlo of the Gorilla Girls, Raina Fahey from Radical Crossfit, Emily Zoe Baker, Anna Nicole, and Shiny Shiny. Alright, we are Cunts in Space, and we are three queer feminists starting up a podcast today to try and, I guess, bring a few different voices out into the webosphere. Hey, Patty and Jack.
That's right.
Uh-huh, Patty. No, you gotta talk.
Anyway, yes, that's right.
I think there's sort of there aren't many queer feminist voices out there. Hey, there are a few kind of queer podcasts around, but not many made by women that I'm aware of. Hey,
I don't know. We don't get really a lot of good internet access where we come from, so maybe we just missed them all. But there probably are some. I'm just not sure.
Trust me.
But we just thought we'd make some.
Anyway. Yeah, we like listening to our own voices.
Why not?
And hopefully you do too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, like, each episode we're planning to cover slightly different ground, I guess, kind of depending on our whims,
right.
Mainly.
What's new in the podosphere?
What's new in the podosphere and what's new in the femiqueerosphere? By Sophia, and right now this episode is going to be on masked feminist bandits.
And can we just make a little toast, because it is the first one ever, so it's
ching ching.
So ching ching.
Bottoms up. I hope everyone out there in listening land had a cheers with us.
What are we going to do?
Well, this episode we're looking at women who wear masks for feminist purposes. Do you guys, you're Patty and Jack in another life, in a ultra hip band, Shiny Shiny. Have you ever gone down the mask road?
Makeup across our eyes.
Oh, that has a name.
It's Monica.
It's a Monica. Because wow. I guess in our other worlds, what we do on our shiny land, it's you know, not that fantastically supported in our day-to-day lives, so having a little mask to hide behind.
Mask, yeah.
It's really interesting, actually, isn't it, being able to kind of adopt a different persona if you put on costume or if you put on, even if it's not actually going to be effectively hiding yourself. It's kind of just
That's the thing though with the mask, isn't it? It's not really hiding yourself, because you know, when you think about like that whole concept of the masked balls and everything, people put a mask on. It wasn't really to hide themselves. It's kind of like to, you know, to hide their normal persona so they can just act out their total, you know, the rest of their passion and ideas and concepts. It's like the mask to hide away their normal, you know, nice 9-to-5 personality.
Yeah, so sort of really.
Your other side can come out.
Yeah, really liberating.
Yeah.
In a sort of a way that may not occur to you originally. It's sort of, it actually gives you freedom rather than.
Wow! Charlie.
Shit, cat on the loose in the studio. It actually gives you freedom rather than restriction.
Yeah.
Which is just sort of such a fascinating thing to explore. And it's sort of masks. I mean, fuck, we could start up just a mask podcast to explore it on end. But we're. Don't worry, listeners. But it's going to be a really good one, because we're going to be talking Gorilla Girls, talking to us, which is such a coup. Whoa. The original masked feminist bandits. We've also got
Sally Beard from La Barbe, Australia. The Aussie branch of the French satirical feminist group, who don beards and accost groups of power and influence. Like, they've gone into the French Senate and whatnot, and drawn attention to gender inequities. And so we've got Sal Beard talking about beard making, and then we've also got a couple of rad local performers. We've got Emily Zoe Baker performing a spoken word piece, and we've got Anna Nicole playing a track, and I do believe we've got Shiny
Those naughty in the house. Beards, masks, random.
Strictly unreleased B-side. Especially for Cunts in Space.
B-side Cunts.
Yeah, you'll hear it here and only here. And that's really, really special considering with a name like Cunts in Space, the most internet searches are going to totally block it, and so pretty much no one is going to hear this ever. So exclusive.
In the B forever. Excellent.
Cunts in Space!
That was fantastic, dog.
Sorry. Vegan Zombies by Emily Zoe Baker.
Is it vegan or vegetarian?
No, it's vegan.
It's vegan?
It's vegan. Pets. Emily Zoe baked this vegan zombie.
Covered in corn husks, licking tomato pulp from his lips, he growls. Even the last of the humans have to laugh, lowering their crowbars as he attacks crispers, drinking the black juice from dead fridges. If there are any farmers left, they might get the shotgun as the vegetarian zombie rips open the heart of an artichoke. The undead salad beast, as sweet as a cabbage moth. His brothers rake through bodies with their fingernails, black mouths and rabbit eyes, picking lives from their teeth. He tries to blend in, dripping beetroot blood and chili seeds, gorging on onion skin, apricot flesh, hands of bananas, ears of corn, tongue in mango cheek. His skin smooth like tofu, clear eyes and a bright scowl, not the slightest trace of an iron deficiency.
We're very honoured to be joined by two of the Guerrilla Girls, Frida Kahlo and Katja Kollwitz, the founding members of the Guerrilla Girls, who are, of course, the original masked feminist bandits. Guerrilla Girls started up in 1985, I believe, protesting against the inequities in art galleries, in gender-based inequities in art galleries in New York. They've put up rad posters all over town, highlighting these, and have since expanded to write several books and inspire women across the world, including the Cunts in Space women. Okay, so I am joined by two of the Guerrilla women from Guerrilla Girls today. Thank you so much for making time to speak to me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Casey. Great to be here.
So there are a few, or quite a few, feminist groups today who emulate Guerrilla Girls by concealing their identity. Pussy Riot and La Barbe in France are a couple. But who were your influences when you started out?
That's a good question. I think we are lifelong activists, and before we started the Guerrilla Girls, we admired everyone who speaks up for what they believe in, And we also liked people who do it in a crazy way. And some of our models were in the culture at large, you know, like social satire, comedians, things like that.
But no particularly masked actors?
No particular masked artist that I can think of, Frida.
Well, Batman, Superman, another one. Robin Hood. you know, I think that we didn't have an immediate predecessor. We sort of put together different pieces, you know, social satire, masked Avengers.
Graphic art.
Yeah, comedians. It was an amalgam of a lot of, you know, different sources, but not no one group in particular.
And with so masked, when you started out, was that a pragmatic thing to conceal your identity, or it might be hard to tease out all of them?
We didn't have masks in the beginning.
Oh, really?
So we didn't start, we didn't say, oh, let's be a group of women who wear gorilla masks. That came later.
Okay.
Pretty quickly, but later.
Yeah.
What we did was we decided, we formed to put up posters in New York about the really sorry state of women and people of color in the New York art world. That's really where we focused in the beginning. You know, we've now expanded to a million other issues and things like that. And we decided to be anonymous, and we just put up these and named ourselves Guerrilla Girls, like the Freedom Fighter,
yep.
And put these posters up on the street, and all hell broke loose, and people wanted to speak to us. So what to do? We needed some kind of disguise.
Yeah.
And the gorilla mask happened really just by chance. Someone was once doodling the gorilla, the animal, instead of Guerrilla, the revolutionary. And I don't know, it just seemed... Let's make that our disguise.
When we first started putting the posters up, we had no idea that we would be a real presence. We thought we would just be sitting in a room, thinking up posters, putting them up in the dead of the night. We never knew that. We never realized that we would have to take this persona into the public and speak to people. It just it was nothing we ever had in mind. So it was all kind of serendipity. It was nothing that we strategized, or we didn't try out three or four different ideas and pick between them. It just one thing led to another, to another, to another.
Well, we did wear ski masks in a couple of interviews.
Yeah, because we hadn't really armed up the right recipe.
Isn't this better? I mean, you know, it was just fate that we found this. Every day is Halloween thing.
Meant to be.
Yeah. And anyone who analyzes this any more than that is spending more time on it than we did.
That's true. That's really cool.
I'm interested in that you started out not knowing that you'd have this presence. So what motivated you? I mean, you're going out there putting in all this effort with, you know, surely you must have thought that you couldn't have made a dent.
Well, wait, going back to what Frida said, let's not say it was all this effort. We literally had the idea of two posters. We called a meeting of a bunch of friends and colleagues. We named ourselves the Gorilla Girls. We passed the hat around to pay to print the posters.
Yeah.
And we put them up on the streets. So we had, that was as far as the strategy went in the beginning. What we wanted to do was make everyone in the art world feel responsible for discrimination. We were saying, we're all responsible for this, and it's all up to all of us to change it. It was really out there. We proved our case with statistics, because we've always used, you know, facts and humor, crazy visuals, you know, very in-your-face kind of design that you kind of couldn't forget once you saw it.
So it wasn't just the galleries. They weren't just your target, but it was their broader art world.
Well, if you look at our, you know, the posters we did the first few years, we went after galleries, we went after museums, we went after art critics, we went after male artists, we went after funding sources. We kept putting our finger on a different part of the art world, because every part of the art world sort of laid it on someone else's back. You know, well, the male artist said, well, I can't tell my gallery what to show. And then the gallery said, I can't show anything that collectors can't
won't buy. And the collectors said, well, I can't buy anything that museums don't show. So everyone was passing the buck, as we say. So we decided to go after every part of the buck.
Go after the lot.
Yeah.
But not just that, though, not just the people in power, because your message was seen also by people like me, you know, people who don't have any sort of influence or so think over, you know, making decisions in the art world. And I find that really exciting because you're not just asking the institution to change, but you're asking people to change their ideas about the institutions.
Yes.
What we realized, the first few protests that Kat and I went to before the Gorilla Girls were actually formed were at the Museum of Modern Art, and there was a show there that had a pathetic number of women in it, and we spent all day outside on a picket line, and we realized no one was listening to us. Everyone who went into museums thought that it was a meritocracy, and that, you know, why complain about what the curators are choosing, because they're the curators. So we decided that we would try to undermine the authority of curators, and also inspire in the general public the right to criticize the art world.
Yeah.
Just the way you criticize every other aspect of culture and human activity.
Yeah, I think that's really shocking to people, isn't it? It's one of our sort of hallowed icons.
Yeah, this was true in Hollywood too, though. I mean, we've done a lot of campaigns about anti-Hollywood campaigns as well, and it's in a lot of ways those statistics are even worse than the art world, and it's something people don't know. I mean, whenever we put up a big street project or a billboard about Hollywood, we get letters from people saying, wow, we never knew this stuff before. So part of complaining is just putting information out there.
And also we put it in public, and we were trying to reach the people who are not necessarily the tastemakers in the art world, but the art workers, you know, the art production people, artists, people who go to museums, people who make up the art-loving public. And we wanted to plant a discourse in their, you know, in their lives about what it was that they were being fed as, you know, as art. As the history, the art history of our time.
So I think, well, people are sort of drawn towards power and to in shaping their opinions about art, and now you've got a bit of power. you've certainly got influence, and you know, much more so than you did when you started out. And that's an extraordinary path for a woman to travel. You've seen sort of both sides in a way. What's it like, Amelia?
Well, it's a dilemma in some ways, and it's a real gift in other ways. So we've always been about getting our message out to as large an audience as possible, and we have more ability to do that now in a bigger way than ever before. So that's great. On the other hand, we do get invited to speak or be in exhibitions at some of the institutions and great museums that we've spent our lives attacking. And that always leads you to wonder, to worry, you know, are we being co-opted? Are we going to lose our edge? For now, we just feel you can't pass up the opportunity to be in these institutions, because it's great right on the walls to have a critique of what those institutions are doing.
But on the other hand, you have to be really tough with the institutions too, and you can't let them use you. And just recently we were invited to do a project for a major institution that will go unnamed. And at a certain point they tried to control what we were doing, and we basically had to say, it's either this or nothing, we're going to walk away. We will not allow ourselves to be censored. So it's not as though we will do anything and everything. It's just when a museum does ask us, or an institution asks us to do some form of institutional critique, we will do it only if we can do it under our own terms.
So do you think that even people who we might perceive to be having power might be shaped more than we know by the institutions? They're still kind of dictating how it works.
Well, it's a vicious circle. You know, museums do have a lot of, people with good intentions, but because the direction of museums these days is very corporate. You know, they have to have big fancy buildings. They have to have big fancy parties. You know, they have to do things that cost a lot of money, so then they have to attract money. How do you attract money? Well, we have to have moneyed people on our board. Oh, they've got to be art lovers or art collectors. And, oh, my God, well, there are art collectors on our board, and they can influence their investment. So all of a sudden, there's this situation that's been created that's a kind of a vicious circle, and it's corrupt.
Yeah. Well, thank you for making yourselves available for the very influential Cunts in Space podcast. A bit of a sellout there.
Why didn't we think of that name all those years ago?
Sure to be a big hit, you know.
It was racy that we used the word girls, but you're using the word cunt. That would be gorilla cunts. That would be pretty interesting.
Well, they have them,
I just
right?
have a visual there. We're joined now by Raina Fahey. Raina runs the craft cartel with This Cunt and also does Radical Cross-Stitch Posse. Okay, Raina, welcome to
yes.
Cunts in Space. Cunts in Space!
Woo! Cunts in Space!
So, Raina, you are a craftivist extraordinaire. You are director of Radical Cross-Stitch Posse. And we've done many shenanigans before in the past in our craft cartel. But you're my sort of go-to woman when it comes to feminist history or feminist activism history, I reckon, because you've hosted workshops and given talks on the subject. Hey.
Yes.
So what is it with masked...
That sounds about right.
What is it with masked feminists? What's the deal with that? When did that all start?
Masked feminists? Well, I'll tell you what. The earliest example I know would be during the American suffragette movement.
Yeah.
When women were known to have masked themselves because they supported the suffrage movement and were prepared to go public... asterisk, but
yeah.
They were prepared to show their faces. So we're assuming that those women were people who were married to high-profile people, like politicians or judges or ministers or whoever, but had their photographs taken with suffragette placards, but weren't prepared to show their faces. So I guess that would be the oldest example that I know of.
What were their masks?
But those were the days of photography, so there might have been stuff before that we just don't know about.
Yeah, right. What were their masks? What sort of masks did they have?
They had really freaky, just flat white masks, like without even nose holes. So I don't know what they've done to them.
Like,
but they were, you know, like
Ku Klux Klan kind of things. Oh, right, okay. Oh, sweet.
Yeah, like Phantom of the Opera, but the whole face.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
That kind of solid, but completely, like, showed all the features kind of mask.
Yeah, right. Because there's an interesting thing, like, the you sort of read a bit about how the Guerrilla Girls started, and it was also because they didn't want to taint their reputations a bit, I gather, you know, and so there's sort of like there's a bit of masking to hide as well as what it kind of becomes, which is masking to, in order to be every woman kind of a deal, hey?
Yeah, I think, masks, through the history of mask use have been used for various different means, and it's been from, you know, traditionally it's been to distract, to take away from the features of whoever's face it is so that they're taken out of it, so that they're not a distraction. So if it's a famous person or a wife of a famous person or whatever, so that doesn't detract from what it is that they're trying to talk about. And yeah, then there's also the anonymity thing, so trying to represent a collective. And then now, I mean, the huge idea of the mask is because of the fear of surveillance.
Yeah.
And how that's been used as a tool to try and keep us down, but how we've now used masks as a tool to prevent surveillance from having an effect on us.
Is that effective, though, do you reckon? I mean, sort of, once you walk out...
In certain places...
Yeah?
You know, I mean, if you're talking about a protest where something is theoretically illegal is about to occur, or you're attending a protest and you know that there's going to be mass participation of civil disobedience... For a political purpose, not just for, you know, just for fun, but for thought through reason, then preventing yourself from being surveilled is, I'd say, a totally legitimate act of political disobedience.
But don't you reckon when you walk outside of the view of one camera, there's going to be another camera somewhere else to catch you?
Yeah, I wouldn't advocate that as a way of just, like, managing your way through your everyday life.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it is, yeah, it's a very complex issue, the use of masks, and certainly a lot has been written about it. But, yeah, I think that's one of the nice things about the current use of masks within radical feminist action, is that it is about bringing... taking it away from the individual identity and saying we're actually part of a group that's feeling this impact of whatever the powers that be are trying to get up to. So, you know, we feel the impact of your policy making or decision making, and as a group we have a real problem with that. And a mask is able to bring people together as a group like that. And the Pussy Riots is a classic example. You know, a group that it was just a costume, it wasn't necessarily even, the political context, it was being used as a political mask, but, you know, it was a costume prop.
But they're actually like the... But the three women who, they're actually denying that they were even there, so they're kind of using their mask status, you know, they're to, say that they weren't there. So I think it probably was a sort of...
Yeah, and at the same time, we can say we were all there. We're all Pussy Riot.
We are all Pussy Riot. Know? We should all be Pussy Riot.
Yeah, the Pussy Riot mask is not a person, it's an idea. And that's what's really useful about masks and what they can be used for. And I mean, if you want to be really corny about it, I mean, V for Vendetta is a classic example of how it exhibits that idea.
What's that?
You know, that everyone in that... Everyone is V. you can use a really simple prop to ridicule the idea that the state can kill an idea. You know, you just can't kill an idea.
Yeah, it really sort of it beefs up your, like, when you're coming from a position of having very little power, as, you know, women in general are coming from that position, the mass of it, so sort of the idea that it's, you know, if it's just one woman it could be knocked down, but if it's several then you've got a bit of clout.
Yeah. You've got a problem on your hands, sir.
Yeah. So it's sort of like smoke and mirrors kind of thing, which we're well versed in, eh?
Yep.
So what are some of the mask activities? You've done some undercover subversive actions.
What have I done in mask? Well, some of the fence stuff, we cracked out the balaclava.
Yeah.
It's actually more for fun.
Yeah. I know, I was just thinking of that. No, it was sort of so hilarious even that we did it at night time. For listeners to Cunts in Space who don't know what we're talking about, Raina sort of leads fence
stitching graffiti little escapades now and then, and it's been kind of hilarious that it has been done at night time, because when I don't know, when I've tried to do it in the daytime, we haven't been hassled at all. I think because, you know, you're sort of women, you don't get kind of, people don't think you're doing anything bad or whatever, you know. But it was fun to do it at night time.
Yeah, I usually do stuff at night because that's when my kids are asleep. I'm trying to be sneaky. It's easier in terms of babysitting. and in those circumstances where we've cracked out the knitted balaclavas, it's generally been to keep us warm. I'm trying to think. The only other time I had a really interesting experience where I didn't mask up, but I kept my face well hidden, was when I was engaged in a naked action. I was with a group of people who spelt out "No GE" on the lawn of the New Zealand Parliament our naked bodies.
Yeah.
And whilst I didn't wear a mask, I made sure I kept my face down because I was working at Parliament at the time, and I didn't want my role as a parliamentary staff member to detract from what was happening.
Yeah.
I was there as a private citizen to support the action because I thought it was something that was really, really important, and I believed in, and I was prepared to lay my naked body on the line for, but I didn't want who I worked for and what I did in Parliament to take away from that. So I kept my face down. So whilst this, you know, it did eventually break that, you know, a parliamentary staffer was involved in this, the original, you know, the main story that ran about that action was about the action and not about me.
Yeah.
So that's an example of, you know, having to concealing identity for the purposes of not wanting to detract from the issue.
Comes judgment day, hey, you wanna have your say? You shut your mouth off and give me shit because I'm gay. Well, the times are a-changing and society's rearranging. Yeah, this woman's generation won't accept your domination. Won't hear your diagnosis of homosexual psychosis, and we will laugh in the faces of homophobes and racists. I'm a woman, proud and free, free to be me. Free from the slavery and misery and conformity. I don't need your God-fearing guilt or your emotional oppression. I'm gonna walk through life and learn my own lessons through freedom of thought and freedom of expression and lesbian love that'll take me to heaven. Cause I love my woman, yo, my woman loves me. We're fucking proud of our sexuality. Yo, yo, you can have your husband and your colour TV, and I'll have my clit licking cowgirl all for me. Lash out. You see your dyke on the street and feel the need to shout out. You're dirty, you're fucked, hide your love in the toilet. Well, I found haps and your fucking words can't spoil it. So choose your moves carefully because I can see through your attack. Smell that fear in the air as you watch your own back. Yeah, but karma is karma, baby, that's all I can say. I hope your daughter's gay and have a good fucking day. I love my woman, yo, my woman loves me. We're fucking proud of her sexuality. Yo, yo, you can have your husband and your colour TV, and I'll have my clit licking cowgirl off of me. I love my woman, yo, my woman loves me. We're fucking proud of our sexuality. Yo, yo, you can have your husband and your colour TV, and I'll have my clit licking cowgirl off of me.
Imagine if you had to lick it. 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 Imagine if you had to lick it, lick it like you really love it. Imagine if you had to lick it, play the licking cowgirl. Imagine if you had to, imagine if you had it, lick. Imagine, lick it, imagine, imagine if you had to lick it.
That was Shiny Shiny and the Rap Against Homophobic Crap. Coming up next, we have
We've got an interview with Sal Beard from La Barbe Australia, operative, the sister of La Barbe France. It's just started up. And she's going to be talking about how you make beards and coining a new phrase, which is feminudists, I believe, Patty.
Sounds like something you've been to.
Who wouldn't
tits
be out.
Feminudity. Tits. Awesome.
Yeah. Feminudist, but perhaps not feminudist as rad as you do, feminudist. We really have
it's
to.
Not the Northern Rivers
we have
it's
to
not
go.
Dolphins.
That's episode. That's episode three, I think.
Yeah, we've really got to go into more depth about your experiences with feminudists in the future. I reckon, Patty.
It'll happen.
It better happen.
But right now, Sally.
Yeah,
Sally.
Right now,
yes.
Sally.
Let's not,
one thing at a time. One thing at a time.
Yeah, okay.
But keep the listeners excited.
Are you going to call me Sally Beard?
Yeah, I think so. Okay, I am joined here in a highly secret location with Sally Beard, and she's one of the La Barbe Australia operatives. I'm also a La Barbe Australia operative. We're about to take our first action this Tuesday. G'day, Sally.
Hi, Casey Beard.
Sally Beard. I guess that I should tell people a bit about La Barbe first. And La Barbe is a group of French satirical feminist activists, and they started up a couple of years ago in Paris on International Women's Day. And what they do, their modus operandi, is to go into organisations which are dominated by men, powerful organisations, and then congratulate them while wearing beards. So at one point during the proceedings, this is what they've done in the past, is they get up and they put on these beautifully handcrafted beards and address the gathering, highlighting statistics, congratulating them, for example, on having like 97% male board members and other, you know, usual kind of things. And they've been really successful in kind of bringing issues like equal representation, or very unequal representation, into sort of the public discourse in France.
Mm.
So I met up with a couple of them a couple of years ago, and now we're bringing the idea to Australia.
Yes, that's where I come in, because I was really excited by Casey's enthusiasm after she met these women at Ladyfest, and we thought it was something totally doable in Melbourne. My experience in the past of male-dominated institutions is pretty much universities, and I was in student politics and representing the postgrad students at a uni, and the university committees and academic board and the executive council and everything were all men. Sometimes there was a woman that acted like a man, but there weren't very often any women that I really related to in these decision-making bodies. So it's something I fiercely believed in, and I love the fun aspect of dressing up, of making the beards, then getting in costume and being playful with it.
Yeah, it seems like it's really a neat way of kind of pulling the rug out from under the patriarchy, is how I see it, because people don't really know how to respond when you're doing something that's lighthearted. They find it very hard to kind of paint you in a negative light, which is really neat.
And I think it's a stroke of brilliance, this idea of congratulating them, because when you're congratulating somebody, they can't actually be against you. I mean, they get that it's tongue-in-cheek and that it's satirical, but because you're not sort of rah-rah out there, out to get them, it's a very odd power dynamic.
Yeah, totally. Very curious, because we haven't actually had our first action yet. By the time this podcast goes to air, it will all have been, the shit will have hit the fan. But at the moment, we're still in the plotting stage, so I'm really curious to see how it all goes down.
Mm.
I guess we can reveal here.
In our secret location.
We're going to be targeting the mining industry through the Melbourne Miners Club. Are you nervous, Sal?
I am a bit nervous. I'm a little bit nervous.
Yeah.
Just because our mission is about a greater representation for women, and the mining industry is one that I feel a little bit unsure about. I don't know whether I want more women represented in the mining industry or whether I want more women protesting against the way the mining industry works. You know, it's the representation of women around this issue is probably could be done in better ways than having them on the boards or involved in the mining industry.
Yeah, it's a very, it's a tricky one, and it's one that we've had a lot of discussion about in like the LaBarbe operatives, the beards have, about how best to go about this or whether we should even make this the target.
Mm.
And so at the moment, you know, the message might get some honing down, but we are thinking to do it as a climate change sort of a focus, so about how mining industry is fast-tracking climate change, which then, you know,
impacts women much more adversely.
Yeah.
And the impacts of climate change on women and highlighting that to these people who actually would have the power to make a difference, but, you know...
Yeah.
They don't think that way. I'm hoping we have some inroads. I don't know whether we'll change their minds, but at least highlighting the issue and maybe getting a bit of exposure about highlighting the issue will start to make a difference or start to get people questioning it.
Yeah, well, in my mind, like, everything is a feminist issue.
Mm.
But I know that that is really not how the rest of the world thinks. You know, feminism is a very, so, you know, that's in a little box, a little dark box in the corner, you know?
Some people say it's dead.
Yeah. Post-feminist. Often asked, are you a feminist or a post-feminist? Feminist. Fuck. As I saw this beautiful... beautiful little slogan, which is, I need to get on a t-shirt, I'll be a post-feminist in a post-patriarchy.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll get you a t-shirt.
Maybe we could wear them when we're there.
Yeah. Do a whole costume.
Strip out of our corporate gear and underneath we'll have the t-shirts.
Yeah, and then we'll do a bloody feminine thing and just... show our tips to the world too. What's your take on them? This podcast, the theme, by the way, Sally Beard, is going to be masked bandits. And so, and there's a group who sometimes call themselves feminists, sometimes don't. In the Ukraine, Femin.
I don't know. You haven't heard them?
They protest, and their form of protest is to go topless and sort of protest about various things, you know, really far-reaching things.
And are they going topless because it's an expression of their freedom to be however they want to be, or is they going topless to get attention to their cause, or both?
I think the latter. It seems to be sort of a little bit murky. Like why exactly they're doing it. I find it, it doesn't really appeal to me what they do. I don't know. It just does seem sort of like a, I can't really articulate why. exactly. It's not very clever.
Mm. Yeah, and you wonder, will the message get lost in the sensationalism? You know, I don't know whether the people who might click their website to see them topless are going to be interested in the message.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, very much so. But I mean, also as well, it's good, like, I'm sort of loath to anyone who's kind of trying to bumble their way through and, you know, sure, the Ukraine needs feminist messages, you know, and people just sort of trying to... put their message out there, but yeah, they've done some sort of funny, some pretty iffy stuff. Like, I don't know, they did a protest in Paris where they were calling for Muslim women to get naked and all this sort of like, oh.
So they're nudists.
Nah.
Feminudists.
Maybe. You just coined it. You heard it here first, folks. Feminudists.
We could start a whole new movement. Just wearing beards and that's it. But seriously.
Possibilities. What else? I wanted to ask you about... Edit, Patty. Delete.
Did we want to talk about the failed attempts, like the football one, and how we had...
No.
No?
Because okay. I think I still want to do that sometime.
Okay. Did we want to talk about the beard wearing? No. I don't know.
So, Sal, you have designed our beards for the actions.
Yes. Yeah, yep. I pretty much went to YouTube. Because I really needed some help. I'd never made a beard before. And there's a lot of help out there. And there's actually such a thing as a rally beard. And I was really shocked that this is a broad concept, a rally beard that you can wear at rallies. And it happens in the United States at things like basketball games and baseball games.
Oh, really?
It's really strange.
For what purpose?
I don't know. But that's where this rally beard was being made that I saw the YouTube clip about, how to make a rally beard. Anyway, it's super easy. So we use polar fleece and stretch long strips and then stick them to a template made out of polar fleece.
They're really beautiful.
But they're so beautiful if you do the attention to detail, aren't they? And they get all curly and messy and, yeah.
Yeah, they're something I will definitely wear with pride when I get up there and accost the mining bigwigs.
Mm.
Are you worried at all that they're going to, like, get angry with us? Or how do you reckon they're going to
react? I just don't want to be manhandled. Womanhandled, whatever, handled by them, their security people, if they have any. I don't want it to become that kind of a situation where they treat us like aggressive protesters, because I hope that they see that there is a light-hearted side to it and that we are, it's a non-violent protest and that it's actually quite interactive. If they interact with us, we'll be playful with them, you know. There's no need to come in heavy-handed.
Yeah, well, one of the things that the women from French Labar said to me, like, they have been manhandled, but not severely, like, that they kind of go up and they sort of say to the people, we're just going to take a minute, and they sort of do things like they wait for a point in proceedings when it's not going to really piss people off to do it. And to me, I kind of think, yeah, that's the way to go, because we want to make our lives as easy as possible.
Mm.
And as well, one of the beautiful things about this, I reckon, is that it's not actually about addressing the people there. Like, ostensibly, we are addressing the people there, but really we're addressing the wider community, you know? So we just want to get, the money shot with us, you know, congratulating the powers that be. And then, you know, they can go about their evil business and we'll take it to the world.
Mm. Yeah, and I like that about it, the power to affect people beyond that room.
Yeah.
Because they're a really hard nut to crack. We will probably never, ever have an inroad to changing their minds. But, the fact that we're actually standing up to something like that, it's powerful.
Totally.
That we dare to be there and that we're going to have our say.
We are powerful. See, already in the beard zone. All right, Sal Beard, well, I will see you... I'll see you when we take action on Tuesday.
I'm looking forward to it.
Thanks for coming along and talking to Cunts in Space.
Thank you, Casey Beard.
This, what you're about to hear, is Mainlining by Anna Nicole.
Melbourne Mining Club and the beer-dominated mining industry as a whole for their stellar efforts in strengthening the patriarchy, both at home and abroad. By largely excluding women from the top echelons of power and by fast-tracking climate change, which affects beards far less adversely than women, the mining industry is ensuring, thank you, the patriarchy has a strong future. Well done, beards.
Well done, beards. Well done. Strengthen the patriarchy.
To present the mining industry with this golden beard. To encourage them to continue on strengthening the patriarchy. 83% of the mining industry employees are beards. 86% of your managers are beards. And 96% of your CEOs are beards.
Thanks for joining us at Cunts in Space.
This has been episode 1, Master Feminist Avengers.
So tune in again. You can download episodes at www.cuntsinspace.wordpress.com. And thanks to RMIT Link Arts for giving us the dosh to print our first round of USBs. On ya.
Thanks, cunts.